Welcome to Class Matters, an educational program examining the role played by social classes and the class divide in the U.S. and around the world. I'm Rich Whitney.
I'm Paula.
We discuss matters of class because class matters. And today on Class Matters, we want to return to the subject of the war in Ukraine, which is a very important topic, although it has been lost to a large extent because of all the furor over the Israeli-Palestine conflict. But it's important to keep some focus on what's going on in Ukraine because this is an existential threat. The U.S. ruling class, as well as the French and other Western nations' ruling classes, they're basically following an agenda that aims to dismantle and destroy and weaken Russia. And that's really what's driving this to a large extent, as well as their designs for Ukraine itself. And it's important for us to understand this because they are so crazed in this agenda that they are doing things that really, really risk getting us into a nuclear war.
They never learn. I mean, Napoleon got kicked out of Russia. He tried to invade Russia and steal its riches back in, 1812, because the overture of 1812 is about the defeat of the French by the Russians in Russia.
Right.
Then they went all the way to Paris.
Yeah.
And the same thing Hitler tried it. Hitler wanted land, he said, and oil from Russia. He tried invading the Soviet Union. I mean, he killed 27 million people.
Yeah.
But in the end, the Soviet troops ended up in Berlin.
Yeah.
Why do they think they can do it now, these fools?
Well,
Russia has a habit, a history, I should say, of driving out invaders and protecting their land.
Yeah. Yeah. And it seems to be playing out that way this time. And with that in mind, I want to start with an article that just appeared yesterday by Aaron Maté, one of the great independent journalists who writes on this subject. And it's entitled, Top U.S. Official Admits Failure in Ukraine. When Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin declared 2 years ago this month that the U.S. goal in Ukraine was to see Russia weakened, President Biden and other top officials cringed, the New York Times later reported. Biden was so agitated that he not only called Austin to remonstrate him for the comment, but also directed his staff to leak the fact that he had done so.
Well, I mean, that's really weird because they've been saying it all along. We're going to destroy Russia. The ruble will be rubble.
Yeah.
We're going to destroy them. We're going to make them so miserable that they will overthrow Putin. They're going to starve. They're going to go without chips. I mean, they've been talking about this for 2 years, actually more.
Right.
And now they're going to pretend, oh, no, we never said that. These people are shameless.
Well, I think they try to draw a distinction between that goal and what they're doing in Ukraine, which is all about defense of Ukraine against the Russian aggressors and so on.
Yeah, that's why they spent since 10 years, since 2014, building up Ukraine to attack Russia.
Right, yeah. Anyway, continuing with the article, Biden, seeking tens of billions of dollars and global support for a proxy war with Russia under the guise of defending democracy, was clearly upset that his defense chief had acknowledged what was indeed the long-term strategy, as White House officials told the Times. But by July 2022, when Congress had approved more than $54 billion for Biden's war, along with considerable sums from NATO allies, National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan was free to confirm it. Speaking to a crowd of foreign policy elites at the Aspen Security Conference, Sullivan explained that the United States' quote, strategic objective, unquote, was not to protect Ukraine and bring the war to a speedy end, but to ensure a strategic failure for Putin, and that, quote, Russia pay a longer-term price in terms of the elements of its national power, unquote. For Ukrainians, the U.S. strategy of using their country to weaken Russia's national power and in furtherance of that objective, sabotaging all diplomatic opportunities to end the Russian invasion, has cost hundreds of thousands of lives and about 20% of their territory. Yet even through the lens of a strategic objective that views Ukraine as a tool for bleeding Russia, the strategic failure in the Ukraine proxy war currently belongs to Washington. Speaking to a D.C. think tank, Deputy Secretary of State Kurt Campbell acknowledged that far from suffering the longer-term price that Biden sought to inflict, Russia has been resilient. We have assessed over the course of the last couple of months that Russia has almost completely reconstituted militarily, Campbell said. Moreover, Moscow's newfound capabilities pose a longer-term challenge to stability in Europe and threatens NATO allies.
Newfound capabilities. Again, these people have been fighting off invaders for centuries.
Yeah.
But they just figured out how lately.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and of course, they have no intentions of threatening NATO allies.
No, they don't. You know, this is how they're going to spin it, though. He just talked about the $150 billion. It's actually more like $300 billion. The United States has spent arming and training the Ukrainian military in the last 10 years, right?
Yeah.
They're going to pretend like that $60 billion being held up right now, that right. was it. All those hundreds of billions they right. spent already, all that equipment they gave them already, all that ammo, that wasn't enough. We needed this last $60 billion. That would have turned the trick.
Yeah.
That's how they're going to spin it. Are Americans really that stupid to fall for it? What do you think the percentage is, Americans that will fall for something like that?
Oh, I don't know. I don't even think it's a majority, because some polls show that more and more Americans are getting tired of this.
Yeah.
And they don't want to keep funding the forever wars, including this one.
Okay. So I don't know. It just blows my mind.
Yeah.
Again, 10 years, actually 10 plus years, but 10 years openly in there ever since the coup. After the 2014 coup, the United States openly moved in there. They staffed the government.
Yeah.
Right? They sent NATO in there to retrain the military, because a lot of the military went over to the Donbass side.
Right.
So they've been working on this for 10 years, but now they're going to pretend that it's this last $60 billion that would have done the trick.
This would do it, yeah.
I mean, it's insane.
Well, once they get that, then there'll be another $60 billion or something.
I know, but I don't think Congress is going to... Well, we'll see. Maybe Congress will come through with it. But the point is, it's a stupid thing to say, but they're going to say it anyhow. They're already rolling out this new campaign.
Right.
Jesus. Propaganda.
Yep. For Campbell's superior, Secretary of State Antony Blinken, the admission was ill-timed. Just one day earlier, Blinken insisted that he is convinced that his administration has achieved a defeat, a strategic debacle for Russia in Ukraine, in which Russia is militarily, economically, and diplomatically weaker.
See, here's the thing. They keep talking about how NATO, the entire NATO, like the U.S. and Europe and Japan combined,
right.
has more of a GDP than Russia, therefore they will win. Except for our GDP, 20% of it is the medical industrial complex. A whole lot of it is finance gambling, Wall Street gambling.
Right.
The big pharma, the military industrial complex that doesn't actually produce right. anything that they can use in this war. Most of our economy is, you know, healthcare and credit derivative swaps. Russia is making weapons and ammo.
Yeah.
And they're like, their GDP is so low. Yeah, well, they produce their own food. They produce their own fuel. They produce their own weapons. But their economy is weaker than ours because we have $34 trillion in credit derivative swaps out there.
Right.
So we win.
Yeah.
They believe this.
Yeah, I know.
Or they appear to believe it. They keep saying it.
Yeah. Just as Austin once blurted out the White House's real goal in Ukraine, Campbell has now acknowledged its real result. The U.S. strategic failure extends beyond the battlefield. From the start of Russia's invasion, the White House has routinely boasted about having the ruble reduced to rubble, like you pointed out, causing long-term damage done to the Russian economy and to generations of Russians, according to William Burns in September 2022, and leaving Russia more isolated on the world stage than ever, according to Blinken in June of 2023.
The big bully on the playground really thinks all the other kids are on their side.
Yeah.
And the other kids are backing away going, you know, maybe this is our big chance to get away from crazy nuke country.
Yeah. And more of them are siding with Russia, actually.
Well, why wouldn't they? I mean, who would be on the side of nasty civilian killing terrorist Nazis?
Yeah.
They didn't have to be because someone had their arm twisted.
Yeah. This year, Russia's economic growth is expected to be more than double both the IMF's previous forecast and the rate for Europe overall.
And they're actually making stuff.
Yep.
Not credit derivative swaps.
Yeah, that's right. Perhaps the biggest indicator is Russia's oil exports, which are now more profitable for Moscow than before the invasion. In the here and now, the sanctions have disappointed Edward Fishman, a former State Department official who oversaw U.S. sanctions against Russia, now admits.
Well, you see, they admit Oh, man, the sanctions are disappointing. We killed 500,000 Iraqi children with sanctions in the 90s, and we haven't killed one single Russian baby.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that is so disappointing.
It's just not working.
It's just sad.
Unfortunately, continued Fishman, Russia has now built a kind of alternative supply chain. As for Russia's Blinken-declared global isolation, it is Washington that in fact finds itself virtually alone in its defense of Israel's mass murder campaign in Gaza. Meanwhile, Marine Corps General Michael Langley, the head of U.S. military's Africa Command, recently warned that African countries are at the tipping point of actually being captured by the Russian Federation. Of course, they're not captured, but...
What he means is they're becoming independent.
Yeah.
And France and the United States can't send in troops to kill them because Russian troops are there to protect them.
That's
what he means.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it really means. Blaming the traditional bogeyman of Russian disinformation, a euphemism for challenging U.S. propaganda, Langley additionally complained that the Russian Federation's narrative drowned out the U.S. governments in the past years.
His name's Langley?
Yes.
How fitting.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Ukraine is in a state of peril. Unless Congress approves Biden's $61 billion war funding request...
See, there you go.
Yeah, Ukrainian troops will be forced to go back, retreat step by step in small steps, President Vladimir Zelensky recently warned.
Okay, see, Ukraine isn't in a state of peril. The Kiev regime is.
Yeah.
Yes, those Kiev regime troops do need to go back retreat.
Yeah.
Because they're where they don't belong.
Yeah.
They're in the Donbass, where they've been killing people for 10 years, and the people there don't want them there. This is the truth that even Aaron Maté doesn't say.
Yeah.
Right? These troops are occupying where they should not be.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're killing civilians, and they've been killing civilians for 10 years, and they have to stop. And that's why the people of Donbass took up arms, and that's why Russia intervened, which they call the invasion.
Right.
They intervened because it was getting outrageous. How many people are these Kiev regime going to be allowed to kill before Russia said, that's enough?
Yeah.
And that's what they did in February 2022. That's enough.
Yep. That's right.
This is going to stop right here, right now.
Zelensky even raised the fear that Russia could go to the big cities. To address manpower shortages, Zelensky has reluctantly enacted a long-delayed measure that lowers the conscription age from 27 to 25.
But the United States people are over there going, you need to lower it to 18. You need to get every teenager out there. They all need to be dead because BlackRock owns this country.
Well, right,
they didn't say it like that, but that's what it is. But the problem is, one of the many problems, if you were talking about meat for the meat grinder, you know, if you're trying to depopulate Ukraine by the military... There's not that many of that age, because what happened 30 years ago when the Soviet Union was destroyed, Ukraine's birth rate dropped just like Russia's did.
Right.
Who wants to have a baby when your country has been destroyed and you're now living in poverty?
Yeah.
You know, it was high before that. During the Soviet times, after the war, of course, the population grew and increased and people felt fine having babies because they had maternity leave, they had kindergartens, they had schools, they had money, they had jobs, guaranteed jobs. All that stopped in 1991 when the Soviet Union was destroyed. All that stopped. They turned into America immediately.
Right.
Unemployment, misery, poverty, and the birth rate just fell. So there's not that many cannon fodder of that age.
Right. Yeah.
Because that's when it all stopped.
Yeah. Zelensky also established an electronic database that tracks all males above the age of 17. Yet Ukraine still continues to face such a shortage that a previous request for up to 500,000 new soldiers has been significantly reduced, according to Ukraine's top military commander, General Oleksandr Syrsky.
It contradicts their propaganda that we're winning.
Yeah.
We've killed 100 million Russians and we've only had 17,000 die. But we also need 500,000 more right now. Why?
Yeah.
You already had almost a million men in arms in 2022.
Right.
So if only 17,000 have been killed, why do you need 500,000 more? Yeah. That's when the propaganda hits the other propaganda. Immovable object meets irresistible force.
Yeah. Speaking to Politico, high-ranking Ukrainian military officers who served under Syrsky's predecessor, the recently ousted General Valery Zaluzhny, reported that the military picture is grim. If Russia launches an expected counteroffensive this year, there's a great risk of the front lines collapsing. Adds one of the Ukrainian sources, quote, there's nothing that can help Ukraine now because there are no serious technologies able to compensate Ukraine for the large mass of troops Russia is likely to hurl at us, unquote. Ivo Dalder, a U.S. ambassador to NATO, appears to agree. The last 2 months have not been good for Ukraine, and there's nothing in the offing that it's going to get any better, Dalder recently warned. Yet even as top-ranking Ukrainian military officials warn that nothing can help Ukraine, their Western sponsors nonetheless insist that Ukraine has no choice but to keep fighting.
It's funny. They say, oh, this is Ukraine's choice. This is Ukraine's choice.
Yeah.
But it's been the West the whole time pushing them. Way back when Zelensky tried to make peace with Russia in March of 2022, and the West said, no, keep fighting.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to go on that counteroffensive last year.
Yeah.
Zelensky is like, no, we can't do it. We don't have enough equipment or support. And then the United States is like, do it, do it.
Yeah. They were pushed into
it. It's like disgusting what the United States and the West is doing to Ukraine. It's just wrong.
It is.
But I guess BlackRock tells them to do it, so.
Yeah. Well, they're certainly one of the motivators behind it.
Yes.
If NATO allies deliver what we should, then we were absolutely confident that the Ukrainians will be able to make new gains, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg declared last week. Stoltenberg's faith in Ukrainian gains has not been shaken by Ukraine's own high-level doubts, nor the failure of his prior predictions. 1 year ago this month, as Ukraine prepared to launch what would become a disastrous counteroffensive,
that's what I was talking about.
Yeah, Stoltenberg assured the public, I'm confident that when Ukraine decides to launch new operations to liberate more land, Ukraine will be successful.
They didn't decide.
They did not.
That was not their decision.
Yeah.
Because, again, Zelensky was the commander-in-chief back then, and he was overruled.
Yeah.
Some commander-in-chief.
Yeah, really. Given the failure of last year's effort, a Western ambassador now acknowledges to the Washington Post that Ukraine does not have the power to make another offensive. Yet rather than attempt diplomacy with Russia now, Ukraine and NATO should instead look to 2025 as another year of war, not peace talks, the ambassador advised. This means yet another massive injection of NATO weaponry, using this year to provide Ukraine with everything that's necessary to enter into offensive mode and make substantial gains in 2025.
They didn't even have it last year.
Yeah.
They said, well, you've got to do combined arms warfare. And Ukraine was like, well, we don't have the arms.
Yeah.
You know, combined arms mean we have planes and tanks, and we don't have any of that. We'll do it anyhow.
Yeah.
And then when they failed, they went, well, it was because you didn't do what we said to do. You ungrateful people. They literally sent Ukrainians to die and then said they were ungrateful.
Yeah.
Oh, you're not saying thank you for all the money we gave you.
Yeah.
Well, you're not saying thank you for all the dead Ukrainians we gave you.
Yeah, that's right. A second Western diplomat in Kiev adds that Ukraine will need to draft more soldiers. Nobody wants to really bear the responsibility at this point, the diplomat told the Post.
Oh, yeah, of killing off the entire younger generation. Why would anyone want to bear that responsibility?
Yeah.
And to do it for the United States?
Yeah, but it will have to be done, he adds. I mean, you cannot go on like this. While correct, the Western diplomats' complaints are misdirected. Rather than chiding Kiev for failing to send more young people off to die, perhaps Western proxy warriors could take responsibility for using Ukrainians as part of a strategic objective that has decimated their country in a failed quest to weaken Russia.
Exactly. Well, some of them are saying you just need to hang on till November so Biden will win. I don't know what the big deal about that is, because they rigged the elections anyhow. But imagine telling a Ukrainian mother of an 18-year-old, she only had one kid because she was living in poverty, right?
Right.
You have to send your son off to die so Biden can get reelected. I mean, if she had any brains, she'd be like, no.
Yeah. Well, in the face of this apparent defeat at the hands of Russia, or certainly moving toward defeat,
well, it is the victory of the people of the Donbass.
Right.
We keep calling this Russia versus Ukraine, but the people that live in eastern Ukraine who have been discriminated against and murdered for the last 10 years, they're winning.
Yeah, exactly. Russia's helping.
Yeah, Russia's helping, but they're getting those occupiers off their land.
Yeah. And, of course, some of them want to actually join Russia, so.
Well, yeah.
Okay. In any event, let's move on. In light of that failure of this whole enterprise from the Western imperialist point of view, the Western imperialists are deciding to make things more dangerous. And that's really what drives our concern here, or part of our concern here.
Well, they're magic thinking again.
Yeah.
Just like they say, do combined arms warfare even though they don't have the arms. They literally think that they can send NATO troops there and Russia will go, oh no, NATO troops, we can't hurt them.
Yeah.
They're special. They have like special shielding, NATO shielding on them. We can't hurt them. That's what they think.
Yeah, yeah. So former renowned weapons inspector Scott Ritter, who's now a journalist and writes at scottritterextra.com, had this to say in an article published at that website on March 22nd. This past week, French President Emmanuel Macron declared that there were no red lines when it came to the prospects of French troops being deployed to Ukraine. Initial reports indicated that the French military was preparing to accelerate the reinforcement of a battalion-sized task force, which would be 700 men, currently deployed in Romania, to a brigade, around 2,000 men. France had been preparing to take this action sometime in 2025, but the precipitous collapse of the Ukrainian army on the front lines of its ongoing war with Russia compelled Macron to accelerate the operation in anticipation of dispatching this brigade into Ukraine. In the grand scheme of things, a 2,000-strong French military contingent will not, in and of itself, alter the strategic balance of power on the ground in Ukraine. At best, the French battle group would be able to relieve a similarly sized Ukrainian unit serving in a security capacity so that the Ukrainians could be redeployed to the front, where it could be expected to be ground up in a matter of days.
Kill all the Ukrainians so BlackRock can have their land.
Yep, that's the plan. The French have tried to muddy the waters further by stating that a French contingent, if deployed to Ukraine, would do so in the status of neutral troop, quote unquote. The question is to what extent Russia would allow such a deployment of foreign forces onto the soil of Ukraine, even if those troops were not directly engaged in combat. The answer? Russia would not allow such a deployment. First, the idea of France assuming a neutral posture in a conflict in which they have already labeled the Russians as their adversary is laughable. Adversaries, by definition, cannot be neutral. But the main reason Russia cannot allow even a limited French military deployment in Ukraine is this. If the camel once gets his nose in a tent, his body will soon follow. These 2,000 troops are just the nose of a larger NATO camel. France has already stated that it is prepared to deploy up to 20,000 troops to Ukraine, the vanguard of a coalition of forces drawn from NATO nations that could total up to 60,000 strong. And once 60,000 troops are deployed to Ukraine, then NATO will inevitably use Article 4 of the NATO Charter to define a situation of grave national security importance to the NATO collective and convert those 60,000 troops into a NATO force backed by the full power of NATO. The camel will be fully ensconced inside the Ukrainian tent. And for Russia to remove the camel, it would need to go to war against NATO. Not a proxy war, such as is currently being waged using Ukraine as a tool of the collective West, but rather a full-scale conflict which will inevitably lead to the use of nuclear weapons, at first on European soil, and then later as part of a general nuclear conflict between Russia and the collective West. In short, the end of the world as we know it.
It's the end of the world as we know
That's
it.
That's right. The extent to which the United States is involved in the plans of France and its European partners is not fully known. The Biden administration has consistently articulated against any escalation which could result in American boots on the ground, out of fear of allowing the situation to escalate out of control, resulting in a third world war that would rapidly devolve into nuclear war. Of course, we've already seen, first they said, no, we're not sending any tanks, and they sent tanks.
Yeah, right.
Then we're not sending the fighter planes and the long-range missiles.
We want to destroy Russia.
They send the long-range missiles.
We openly want to destroy Russia, but we want to do it without sending American troops on the ground.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. How's that going to work out? That's probably why they're letting all these military-age people over the border. I mean, there's how many millions of them? And then they come over the border and disappear?
Yeah.
I bet
yeah.
they're being trained.
Russia, however, doesn't differentiate between French boots and American boots. They're all NATO boots. If Russia lets the French nose of the camel into the Ukrainian tent, then the NATO neck will come next, accompanied by the American body, and death will follow. Indeed. With that, we turn to a little follow-up. This appeared at the antiwar.com website by Dave DeCamp. It's entitled, Russian Defense Minister Warns French Counterpart Against Sending Troops to Ukraine. On Wednesday, Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu held talks with his French counterpart, Sébastien Lecornu, and warned against France sending troops to Ukraine. Since February, French President Emmanuel Macron has been openly discussing the idea of the West sending troops to Ukraine, despite the risk of a direct Russia-NATO war quickly turning nuclear. Russian intelligence officials have claimed to have evidence that France was considering sending 2,000 troops as an initial deployment.
Well, they said it out loud.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I guess you can do intelligence that way. Well, just right. Look at their statements.
Yeah, yeah. According to a statement from the Russian Defense Ministry, Shoigu told Lecornu that sending a contingent of troops to Ukraine would create problems for France itself. Macron's talk of sending troops to Ukraine has highlighted the fact that there is a small number of NATO Special Operations Forces in Ukraine. The Discord leaks revealed last year that 97 NATO Special Operators were in Ukraine, including 15 French soldiers.
15. That one strike, they killed 85 French soldiers called mercenaries.
Right.
In Kharkov.
Well, I guess this is official French soldiers, but in any event. But what Macron appears to be discussing is a larger public deployment, something Moscow has warned would make a direct Russia-NATO war.
So they have the nerve to call up and say, hey, Russia, hey, if we send French troops to Ukraine, you won't do anything, will you? And so you went, yeah, we will. We'll wipe them out. Okay, thank you, bye. And then they went and told Macron, yeah, you know, it's probably not a good idea to send troops to Ukraine. Like Scott Ritter said, that was his version of this little talk. They're covering their you-know-what.
Yeah, yeah.
So when it all goes bad, they can go, hey, we told Macron not to do it, but he did it anyhow. That's what that little talk was about.
Yeah, that's
and I, right. You know, I think Scott Ritter's right. He was in the military. He knows about CYA.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Now let's turn to Glenn Greenwald. This is an article that appears at his locals.com website. It's taken from his excellent TV program, which you can watch at rumble.com if you just look up Glenn Greenwald there. This article is entitled, Ukraine Will Join NATO, Vows Antony Blinken.
What an idiot.
Now, we don't have time to really get much into this, but yeah, this is the other provocation from the United States. So the article begins, from the very start of the war in Ukraine, when the United States decided not just to get involved, but to take primary responsibility for arming the Ukrainians and funding, our question, the primary question, has always been the same. In what conceivable way does the war in Ukraine or its outcome, namely the question of who governs various provinces in eastern Ukraine, in what conceivable way does that affect the lives of American citizens, either positively or negatively? Financing the war obviously negatively affects Americans' lives. It means there's less money available for Americans and their lives at home. It's more debt for the United States that the United States has to assume. There's greater risk of escalation. So what's the benefit to American citizens from being so heavily involved in this war? And of course, the other question has always been, why is it that Russia decided to attack Ukraine? Did they just attack out of the blue? Or was there some actual reason that the Russians felt threatened by what was happening in Ukraine? Things like the 2014 change in government, where the elected president of Ukraine was removed from office prior to the constitutionally ending of his mandate, with the support of the U.S. government, to replace him with a much more pro-Western, pro-NATO, pro-U.S. government? Was it the insistence that one day NATO would expand up to the Russian border to include Ukraine, the most sensitive part of the Russian border, that basically for both world wars in the 20th century played a critical role in how Russia was attacked? Whatever those answers are, and we've examined them a lot, we heard from more supporters, oh, well, the idea that Ukraine is going to join NATO is just a figment of the Russian imagination. There's no reason they would have to worry about that. There's no possibility that would happen. That was a made-up fabrication and a pretext for the invasion, we were told. We were told that this was all a figment of the Russians' imagination, and yet today, Antony Blinken, the American Secretary of State, who has been an ardent supporter of the U.S. financing and arming of the war in Ukraine from the start, was at a summit of NATO foreign ministers, and he stood up and sat and stood next to the Ukrainian foreign minister, and this is what he said, quote, Ukraine will become a member of NATO. Our purpose at the summit is to help build a bridge to that membership and to create a clear pathway for Ukraine moving forward. So anyway, we don't have time to really get into this, but we do commend you to take a look at the Glenn Greenwald article or watch the TV show that came from that was from April 4th at greenwald.locals.com or on Rumble. But that's all the time we have. Thanks for listening to Class Matters. We'll be with you again next Monday.